Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
The Leviathan Chronicles, an audio adventure. The story thus far. McCallan and Tully have been taken to the Indian city of Mumbai by Anton and Othello, where McCallan is told she will receive answers as to why the mysterious key has altered her DNA, granting her the powers and lifespan of an immortal. Sedgwick is telling her the story of Evangeline Leifric, a Valkyrie medicine woman living in medieval Norway. Evangeline has made contact with two aliens, Elgar and Kirana, from the planet Sorax, that have crash-landed on Earth. Their injuries are very severe, and Evangeline does her best to treat their wounds, but the severity of their condition requires something literally unearthly, a starstone. The aliens explain to Evangeline that a starstone is a powerful, highly condensed source of galactic energy that can be transformed into a myriad of uses. The starstone they seek was located within their spacecraft and was flung from the wreckage and landed on Elsinore Island. Elsinore Island is populated by a savage tribe known as the Skaradoth, who used to live on the mainland but were banished to Elsinore by British and Valkyrie forces. Evangeline secretly infiltrates Elsinore Island and finds the elusive Starstone, but before she can escape, she is discovered and attacked by a band of Skaradoth guards. And now, Chapter 10, The Gift, Part 2.
She's a kind murderer.
He killed my daughter. Angels.
We should kill her.
Huh? Oh, my head. What happened? Where am I?
You're safe now, Valkyrie. You were unjustly attacked by one of my men. Some of us have not fully recovered from the illness that has swept our island. Our warriors are still too quick to anger. Argator will be punished for his transgression, you may be assured. Your presence here is both welcome and unexpected.
My head feels like it's on fire.
Do you recognize me, Valkyrie?
Yes, of course. You are Vordok. You are the newly appointed leader of the Skaradoth.
Very good. I see Argator's blow has not dulled your mind. Here, drink this. It will help revive you.
The large man covered in leather and furs handed Evangeline a large clay mug filled with steaming tea. The acrid brew tasted bitter, but the fog in Evangeline's head slowly began to clear. She took in her surroundings and found herself in a large mud hut, illuminated by torches stuck into the ground. 10 people stood in the back of the room and stared intently at her. Only Vordok remained in close proximity.
I'm captured, but I must escape quickly. They had the advantage of numbers, so none of them would be carrying a weapon. Could I use violence? But I can't see the exit to this hut. It must be through the crowd at the other end of the room. If they wanted me dead, why am I not restrained? What is it they want from me? Thank you for the tea, Vordok. You'll forgive me if I'm not familiar with the latest greeting ritual of the Skaradoth.
Evangeline rubbed the bump on her head, while Vordok revealed a small smile that faded quickly.
Argator should not have struck you. You're an honored guest. Then you bless us with your presence.
Perhaps I have been struck a bit too hard, but I'm having difficulty distinguishing the difference between sarcasm and sincerity. The Valkyrie and Skaradoth have been enemies for many years. Do you not blame me for your exile?
Our violent ways are as much to blame for our exile as yours. The way forward for our people is through alliances and cooperation, not domination. You have shown your compassion by gifting us with your healing medicine during your prior visit, but not all of us have been cured completely from the scourge of the Red Plague. We thought Argator was well enough to stand guard, but his mind is still not his own. He acted rashly and foolishly, and for that he will receive 30 punishment lashes at High Sun tomorrow. Our food is scarce, and he will go without for 2 days. Too often, our people have acted with their passions and not their minds. Fear has guided us down a dangerous path, which we are still retreating from. Forgive us, Priestess. Though I must admit, tensions are high at our camp, Valkyrie.
Why is that?
We have seen new boats circling the island that are unfamiliar to us. The flow of boats from the south have increased in great numbers as well. We sense danger to our people. You are a wise woman, Valkyrie. What do you know of this?
I think Argator will need his strength over the next few days.
We have no time for riddles, Valkyrie.
You are more right than you know.
Explain.
Do I have the trust of your people?
Evangeline looked directly at the crowd, mulling the rear of the hut. Many eyes met hers. Others avoided it by focusing on the floor.
Some, but you have gained many admirers by healing so many of us.
Do not toy with me, Vordak. You know I did everything I could by bringing enough medicine to heal a few of your sickest children. I promised to try to obtain more to heal the hundreds of others that remain afflicted.
I think it is you who toys with me now. Our village is clean now, thanks to you.
What? What do you mean?
Your medicine, of course. We had so many to heal that we had no choice but to dilute the medicine you gave us with spring water. The results were small at first, but soon many of the afflicted made full recoveries. Just last night, Sordas, our sickest man, was able to rise from the bed and walk to the shores of the beach, something he had been unable to do for months. The Red Plague no longer affects us, Valkyrie. Our freedom is owed to the compassion you have showed our people.
There's no way that can be true. They had enough dosage for 8, maybe 9 children, not hundreds. Chief Vordak, when did the last of your sick become cured?
As recently as last night.
The Starstone.
It was as though the medicine you gave us needed to stay in our bodies before reaching its full strength.
It does indeed, Vordak.
Is that what has brought you back here, Valkyrie? To see the results of your blessed medicine?
Sadly, no. I have come to give you a warning.
Evangeline felt the energy in the room shift distinctly. Fear had been heightened and the crowd stared at her more intently. Vordak seemed to eye her warily.
And what warning is this?
The tension you spoke of earlier? I'm here to tell you it is justified. The boats that you saw entering Sumnatok are reinforcement soldiers. Arms have been delivered to the garrisons in order to fulfill a holy mission.
And what is this mission?
Your extermination.
Silence! Of what madness do you speak? The Skaradoth are now a people with few means. We represent no threat and have garnered no hostility towards any people since our exile. The British and the Valkyrie have vanquished us and we have accepted the conditions of our surrender. Why would forces be sent to eliminate us?
It makes no sense to me either, Vordak, but I have no ties to the British anymore. That is why I'm here, betraying them, to help you. Listen carefully to my words, Vordak. You must gather up your people onto all the fishing boats you have and escape to the southwest quickly. The patrol craft that keep you exiled here have all been recalled to prepare for the invasion of Elkinor Island. You have a small window of time in which you must flee.
She should be killed. She's a spy.
Silence!
Why would I come here? The presence of any citizen at Sumnatok on Elkinor Island without a military guard is forbidden. I risk extreme punishment by even being here. You have no forces. Everyone knows that. And what spy would give you instructions to flee? I know full well that yours and my people have had a history of despise. But a slaughter is coming, and I cannot stand for it. I have helped heal your people in the past. I demand your trust.
And you have it, Valkyrie. My heart tells me you speak the truth.
Then your heart is wise.
I will assemble my people and flee for safety. Perhaps this is a blessing. This barren spit of soil has offered us little sustenance and much misery and disease. Perhaps this has been our penance for the sins of our past. A new chapter may await my people in a new land.
Your people are fortunate to have a wise leader.
Here, take this. It is a small token that my father gave me once when I reached manhood in our tribe. It is a symbol of recognition.
Vordok removed a small pendant from his neck. It was a simple string of leather, but from it hung a small grey charm. He placed it in Evangeline's hand, and when she could examine it closer, she saw it was a metal carving of a wolf, with tiny red stones for eyes. She could feel the importance this pendant held for Vordok.
You honor me, Chief.
No, you honor all of us by saving our lives a second time. Wherever our people may land, I will make sure that they learn from the mistakes of our past and embrace the path of compassion you have shown us. But you must leave here soon before your presence is discovered by the British. I know you have risked much to give us this vital information.
That I have, Vordok. Have your people assist me. I must return to Sumnatok immediately.
Evangeline reached the mainland as the sun went down the following day. The Skaradoth had given her what meager provisions they could spare, but it did little to assuage her exhaustion from recent events. She was forced to ditch the boat several miles north of Sumnatok to avoid any detection as she returned to the port city. Her thoughts drifted to Elgar and Kirana, the two dying aliens she carefully hid outside of Sumnatok. They were depending on her, and she found her fingers kept unconsciously drifting to the starstone she carried with her in her dress. Touching it comforted her, and soon she would be able to save them before it was too late.
But what of Pyta? What is your fate now, my love? What of the Eden Initiative? How can I help you?
Evangeline tiredly walked back to her house in Sumnatok. She unlocked the door and collapsed on the couch. Her hand was still tightly clutching the starstone in her pocket. Indeed, she couldn't remember not having her hand in her pocket for the entire walk back from the boat. Her body was exhausted, but her mind was racing.
How could the Skaradoth be cured of the Red Plague? There couldn't have been enough medicine. Their population should be halved by now. Could it have anything to do with this starstone? The other worlders were right. It doesn't feel of this earth. It feels heavy and hot. I have to deliver it to Elgar and Kirana quickly. I mustn't fall asleep. Be strong, Evangeline. I can't fall asleep. Oh, goddess, where is my Pyta?
But sleep did overtake Evangeline, and as her eyes closed shut, her mind was filled with terrible images of her fiancé. A dream of a tribunal, Pyta stood in a circular room, alone in its center. A stern group of clerics and judges outlined its perimeter. There were accusations, shouting, a traitor. Pyta was pleading for something, her name. She heard her name, and then flames were everywhere, and Evangeline could no longer see Pyta. The flames soon died and were replaced by a blue mist that surrounded Evangeline and passed through her as if she was no longer composed of solid matter. She tumbled through it endlessly while the blueness began to stick to her and cling to her skin. Small pulses of light emanated from various points around her, but she was too far lost to focus on them. It was the last thing she could remember.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Huh? Oh,
damn it, I must have...
Got you, you traitorous witch. You will be damned when the Lord has you in his clutches. Now, seize her!
Kriegerson sprung from behind Evangeline and held a knife at her throat, pinning her to the couch. Four men rushed through the door with ropes and bound her hands and legs tightly.
How dare you! Unhand me immediately! I've committed no crime! I demand to know...
You are in a position to demand nothing. We have evidence of your treason against the crown. We have evidence of your blasphemy against our holy lord. Your witchcraft will no longer pollute our settlement. You will be burned until your unholy flesh no longer defiles this earth.
You cannot do this. I have befriended the British. I have healed your sick. I have been your ally in battle. I taught you how to cultivate a foreign land. Why do you accuse me of such crimes?
Any act of cooperation you offered was either self-serving or a ruse to disguise your own wicked agenda. We know of your Eden initiative. We know of your plan to steal treasures from the crown and church, to fund a godless community of heathens dedicated to exploring witchcraft and sorcery. We know of your secret alliance with the Scaradoth.
The Scaradoth? I have...
Any more lies and I'll have your tongue cut out. You were seen returning from Elkinor Island late last night. Our fishing boats have given reports of Scaradoth braving open seas to flee the exile that has been imposed on them. Surprising that they should cultivate such seafaring ambitions so close to the time of our invasion. An invasion that you had knowledge of. Because of your treason, they almost got away.
Almost?
Oh, my dear. Unless you've used your witchcraft to grant them gills, I'm afraid their new home will be the bottom of the North Sea.
They were defenseless, you butcher! How could you?
Enough! Take her to the pyre to meet her infernal fate. It will be a nice introduction for where you'll be spending the rest of eternity.
The crowd of men grabbed Evangeline and hoisted her high above their heads and exited through the front door of the house. Kriegerson marched out in front of them, proudly displaying their prisoner to the congregation that had assembled outside her home, like she was some recently killed animal. Long shadows were cast over their faces, and the sky was burnt in fiery crimson. The sun had set over Somnotok, and Evangeline realized she had slept for over 12 hours.
My God, it's already twilight. Elgar and Karana, how I failed you, as well as Piter.
She strained her head to look upright and saw that a crowd of over 100 had gathered outside her home. Each person stared back at her malevolently, as if they were looking at a demon. Every single person held a 2-foot wooden cross in their hands and brandished it like a sword.
Silence! Silence! This is not a joyous day. This is a sad day of reckoning. This is the day that the enemies of our church and the Lord Almighty reveal themselves to us. Certain members of our community have betrayed us and their country. We take no pleasure in enforcing the Lord's will. This witch before you may be one of the first, but she shall not be the last. We will not tolerate dissent among our people. Wickedness does not have refuge in Somnotok. Let this be warning to those in our community and beyond that a cleansing is coming, a crusade, one that will reward the righteous and punish those that do not accept the Bible and our Lord. Take this unholy witch to her fate.
The mob that held Evangeline lifted her even higher above their heads and marched through the town square and each of the residents' homes. The crowd jeered and spat at her as she was paraded through the town, and people threw garbage at her from their windows.
These disgusting people. These were my neighbors.
After the center of town, the mob carried her into the council courtyard. Anger and betrayal filled Evangeline. The treachery she felt was so unbelievable that it made the entire experience seem unreal, as if it couldn't really be happening. But deep inside, she knew this was really happening, as her worst fears about the British were confirmed, and the trust she harbored in the inherent good in all men was annihilated. She never believed she could feel emotion this strongly, this utter hatred for the ungrateful savages that now sought to ignorantly execute her. But then, something else replaced her anger. Something stronger. Terror. In the center of the council courtyard was a tall, thick post surrounded by hundreds of long, kindling branches. Just within her strained view, she could see several people holding lit torches.
Goddess.
Evangeline was tightly bound to the post that was surrounded by long, sharp branches that would ignite as soon as they were touched by flame. The post was held by a raised platform upon which she stood as the branches were pushed tighter underneath her. Her anger and terror were so profound that it was hard to stay present and not lapse out of her body. She stared at the rat's nest of branches.
They cut these from the forest.
They actually went into the forest to get ready for this execution. Preparations were made. Forethought was required. How long have they known? They smiled at me when they knew they would kill me. Such treachery. All in the name of their holy lord.
It was hard for Evangeline to move her head because one of her captors tied a coarse rope around her neck, choking her. But she was able to see Mr. Kriegerson climb up on the platform to stand inches away from her face. The sight of him disgusted her, but she wanted him to look her in the eyes and see the hatred she felt for him.
Do you have any words of penance you'd like to say before your judgment is carried out?
Paito will kill you in the most horrible way imaginable when he returns. Your days are sorely numbered.
Once again, your arrogance betrays you. Your husband is meeting your same fate in England right now. The two of you have been found guilty as co-conspirators. You should know that during his trial, he repeatedly tried to convince the council that the Eden Initiative was your idea and that he knew nothing of it. He told them that you were indeed a Nordic witch and were in treasonous league with the Skaradoth. He offered to deliver you to the authorities himself. However, his crimes were as clearly evident as yours. Owing to the severities of the crimes, no mercy or bargain was offered to him. Paito Skarlatan is now a dead man.
You!
The only comfort I can give you is that you'll soon be reunited with your precious fiancé in hell.
Mr. Kriegerson turned away from Evangeline to face the crowd.
Citizens of Somnotok, today let us witness that justice is being served to the wicked. This criminal repents no crime and offers no remorse for her crimes of treason, larceny, witchcraft, and blasphemy against the Holy Lord. Therefore, we grant this witch no mercy and sentence her to death by fire. Let the execution begin.
Mr. Kriegerson hastily jumped off the wooden platform surrounded by branches and directed the torchbearers to ignite the pyre. Evangeline could tilt her head down just slightly. She saw the smaller branches starting to burn and wondered how long it would be before their heat reached her. Despite being raised more than 15 feet above the angry crowd, Evangeline thought they seemed even further away, smaller, distant. Suddenly, she felt something shift beneath her, and Evangeline realized that now the larger branches were igniting. She could just barely feel any heat, but the smoke was starting to invade her eyes and lungs. The smoke was getting thicker, and Evangeline could no longer see the crowd, but now she felt something burning hot against her. Not at her feet where she expected, but on her thigh, a hot pinprick of heat bouncing against her.
The Starstone!
The last set of branches collapsed on the fire, fueling it higher now, overtaking the platform on which Evangeline stood. The heat was searing and the sound of burning wood enveloped her. A roaring inferno singed her hair and face.
I will not die here. I will have revenge.
I will break free.
They will pay.
They will pay!
Something inside Evangeline shifted. Her terror was now anger, and the anger was building in intensity. It had a power of its own that was protecting Evangeline, shielding her from the flame. She no longer felt the heat or heard the roar of the fire that surrounded her. The only heat she felt was the Starstone in her pocket. She reached to touch it, and the ropes binding her snapped like thread. With a quick jerk of her neck, she freed her head and kicked her legs off the wooden post that restrained her. She looked down and was mesmerized by what she saw. Amid the yellow and red flames, the Starstone in her pocket glowed glowed intensely, a bright blue beacon that was feeding Evangeline power and more power. She felt it infuse her and surround her like the flames. Her anger merged with it and built to a single point of explosion. She couldn't take it. She wouldn't die. They would pay. They would! Evangeline reached over her head and grabbed the giant cloak and swung it over her head like a broomstick. The crowd screamed in fear as an explosion of fire erupted from the middle of the courtyard. Evangeline stood in the middle of the fire, which was now reduced to a maelstrom of burning branches and logs. Still holding the giant post, she swung it across her body, spinning round and round and round. The world became a blur and all of the burning wood was violently flung outward at the terrified crowd that was now desperately trying to run out of the courtyard.
If a witch is what you want to see, then a witch you shall have!
The remains of the burning wood were flung across Somnotok, much of it landing on the thatched roofs of the villagers, igniting the straw that lay beneath them. Villagers were running to escape the courtyard through the narrow archway, but to Evangeline it seemed like they were running in slow motion. She grabbed two long flaming branches from the remains of the giant bonfire. She ran through the crowd, throwing the villagers to the ground violently as if they were made of paper. Time had slowed for Evangeline, and her body was infused with a power no human had ever been granted. She headed off most of the crowd at the archway, and then turned quickly to violently thrust the flaming branches into the crowd. At least three villagers were instantly impaled, and several others caught fire. She could see hands trying to grab her, but she swatted them away as if they were mere flies. She moved around each villager as if they were standing still and stabbed each one viciously with the flaming branches. When one of the branches broke, she flashed back to the burning pile and fetched more. Villagers cried and begged for mercy, but they could barely see the blurred images of Evangeline racing at inhuman speed around them, striking each one of them down. She picked up what remained of the long, thick post like a farming sickle, swung it around what remained of the standing mob. Limbs and heads were ripped off and bodies were thrown across the air violently to meet the walls of the courtyard. Evangeline grabbed the torches of her would-be executioner and raced to the center of Somnotok. At least half of the buildings were now burning intensely. In the blink of an eye, she dashed to each house and stuck a torch into the roofs and baseboards, setting the entire village ablaze. The few villagers that had escaped through the courtyard and were now running for their lives were rounded up like sheep and slaughtered as Evangeline violently thrust her hand inside them.
They will pay. They each will pay!
Evangeline flew through the village, repeatedly assuring herself that every structure burned fully, and everybody, every man, woman, and child lay motionless on the ground. Satisfied, but still seething with fury and power, she sped back into the council courtyard where they had tried to execute her. Corpses in their various components lay strewn like discarded children's toys, eerie and motionless, except for one thin body in the corner of the courtyard that was limply crawling towards an escape door. Evangeline smiled cruelly and streaked to the figure which she brutally slammed against the courtyard wall, holding him up by his arms.
Oh, Kriegerson.
You. I knew you were a witch. A demon. You are a demon spawned from hell's darkest depths.
You ignorant, pathetic fool. I am no more a demon than you are with an ounce of integrity. You don't believe in crown or church, just power. Just your own perverted quest for power.
The congregation. You killed my congregation.
Let me help you join them, much as you would have me join my fiancé, Piter.
Evangeline grabbed him by the neck and dragged him out into the town square. Fires were erupting everywhere now. Every tree, every house, every body. In one terrified instant of lucidity, Kriegerson realized that this is what hell would look like. She threw him on the ground and found one last flaming branch about 6 feet in length. She stood over Kriegerson, who looked back at her with absolute terror.
Tell me your last words, Mr. Kriegerson. Do you feel you deserve mercy? Whisper to me all the remorse you must feel. Confess your sins, you maggot.
Please. Mercy. I beg you. I don't want to die. I don't want to die.
You can do nothing except betray those whose hearts are purer than yours. If you care so much about your precious villagers whose alliance you won so easily, then spend your dying minutes with them.
Evangeline thrust the flaming branch through Kriegerson's stomach, pinning him to the ground. She then took all the headless and burning bodies around her and impaled them on top of Tryggason, so that five bodies lay pressed on top, covering him in their dripping blood, while lurid flames danced around him.
It's not Piter, but you that I'll see in hell. Elgar? Kirana? Can you hear me? Please tell me I haven't failed you.
Evangeline entered the abandoned hunting lodge where she had hidden the two aliens. She found them lying on the same blankets she had laid out for them days ago. She looked at them lying so still and had to fight the urge to break down and cry. Her hands and face were still smeared with blood of the slaughtered villagers.
Maybe I am a demon. Cursed and wretched. Everything that gets close to me dies. My temper is cause for murder, and I cannot protect life, which I was trained to do.
She removed the starstone from her pocket and stared at it. It seemed so innocuous now. Just a silvery grey ball, not glowing, not hot. And if not for the blood that covered her, she might have wondered if the horror at Somnatok had ever occurred. But it did. And images of the villagers shouting at her still triggered sparks of rage, and when she thought of her own actions, she felt disgust. She forced herself to quiet her mind of any thoughts and tried to sense Kirana's or Elgar's presence, but she could feel nothing, just emptiness. Evangeline placed the starstone on the floor between Elgar and Kirana and stepped back into the furthest corner of the room. She slumped into a tiny ball and sobbed. Evangeline had collapsed into exhaustion and fallen unconscious. An odd pulsing sound had awoken her. She opened her eyes to see the starstone flickering rapidly in pulses of soft blue light. Ethereal tendrils sprouted from the starstone and were connected to several points on both Elgar's and Kirana's bodies. Evangeline watched this scene intensely for over 2 days, rising only to eat and stretch her legs. Finally, on the second day, she began to sense the presence of the aliens in her mind. They were talking to each other, which struck Evangeline as odd, considering the bodies had been motionless for days now. But her heart leapt at the thought that she would be able to speak to them again. She desperately wanted to make sense of what had occurred in Somnatok. She wanted to understand how she was given supernatural powers and why they had been taken away. She needed to speak to someone not bound by the morals and scriptures of life on Earth.
I don't feel connected to the Earth anymore. I have betrayed my own spirit by murdering crowds and children. I need to look beyond myself, beyond this world, to gain new understanding. I need you, Elgar. I need your guidance to help me regain my sanity. I can't stay trapped in this identity anymore. I beg you to awake.
Evangeline. We are here.
Kirana! Elgar, you are awake!
I am.
We are both still very weak. We are alive. Thank you for everything you have done for us.
You have sacrificed a great deal for us, and have realized great loss.
My humanity, perhaps?
Evangeline, your face and hands are covered with blood. Were you attacked?
Elgar slowly rose to his feet. He stared at the starstone. And then at Evangeline.
Evangeline, what have you done?
One day later, Evangeline stood on her favorite cliff that overlooked the cold North Sea. She stared out into the distant horizon and wondered how far she would have to travel for redemption. The wind that blew through her scarlet hair contained a strong chill, but Evangeline could not feel it. In fact, she could find almost no feeling left in her body. The only thing she could feel was Elgar's and Karana's presence approaching behind her.
You're leaving soon.
Yes.
We will never forget you, Evangeline.
Elgar, help me make sense of what happened in Somnatok. What happened to me there? What did the Starstone do?
Evangeline, the Starstone you recovered was designed as a life support system. When it senses a life force weakening, it automatically infuses that body with the energy needed to heal itself.
The Scaradoth! That is why you sense the Starstone being used. The Starstone's presence on Elkanor Island is what healed them of the Red Plague. It was being used because it was cleansing them of their illness.
A logical assumption.
But then, Why did it have such a different effect on me? I had the strength of 20 men. I had the speed of a falcon. I stood in the center of a bonfire without any...
It had not been calibrated for a human, and that is why you were imparted with such tremendous strength. And it reacted to the anger and fury that you felt. When it sensed your life was in danger, it instantly reverted into a healing mode and delivered as much energy as was possible without killing you. You should know that your physiology has been severely stressed by your ordeal. Let us heal you.
I don't want to be healed. I don't deserve it. I'm no better than the ignorant savages that would have killed me in the name of Scripture. I feel so distant from the consciousness of mankind. I feel alone.
You will never be alone.
Let us heal you.
Mankind will change. You must have hope and trust us. We have seen countless species evolve, and enlightenment is inevitable.
If it doesn't, does it cannibalize or self-destruct itself first?
I won't lie to you, Evangeline. There is truth to what you say. Many races have collapsed under the weight of their own ignorance or predilection for violence. However, those that survive can reach amazing heights of tolerance, technology, and compassion.
I'm afraid I will never live to witness such enlightenment during my lifetime.
Perhaps not as it stands.
Yes.
What do you mean?
Evangeline, you have risked so much to save us. We know of your sacrifices. You must allow us to repay you.
How can you repay me for what I have lost?
Let me ask you a question, Evangeline. If you had one wish, what would it be?
I can't even imagine anything that I...
Think, Evangeline.
Time will always be the enemy of those with greater vision than those around them. There is never enough time.
I want to live forever.
We can help you, Evangeline. Altering your body is a simple affair for us. But the larger question is, to what end will you apply your immortality? Forever will give you tremendous opportunity, wisdom, power, knowledge. But it could also become a prison to contain guilt and sorrow and hopelessness. Think carefully, Evangeline. Is this truly what you want?
Evangeline looked out to the ocean and reveled in its vastness. She wondered what lay beyond the horizons. She turned over her head and could see the last vestiges of Somnotok smoldering in the far distance. The landscape seemed dead to her.
Elgar and Karana, I ask that you let me be immortal. I want to complete the Eden Initiative. But with my immortality must come safety, and I will need your help. I want to go someplace that no one will ever find me. I want to be hidden from the rest of the world. I don't feel connected anymore to mankind. I want to go someplace separate. The Eden Initiative will never prosper if mankind is allowed to meddle with pursuit of enlightenment. I must build a sanctuary for truth, a fortress where the cultivation of knowledge will be safe. I want to build a place that no one will ever find us.
You know your planet better than we. Where do you think you could find such a fortress?
I think I know a place.
Frigid Lake Superior. A fabricated creature birthed from the mind of a disturbed genius stalks the very people who created it. Ancestor, by number one New York Times bestselling author Scott Sigler, is a classic tale of science gone horribly wrong. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
McCallan sat dumbfounded in Sedgwick's office, deep under the city of Mumbai. He had just finished the story of Evangeline, the world's first immortal, and her head was swimming with questions.
Wait, Sedgwick, what happened to Evangeline? Did she live forever? What did the aliens do?
The aliens, having been indebted to Evangeline, made the offer to heal her ravaged body. The severe stress that the Starstone caused when it imparted Evangeline with supernatural abilities had left acute damage upon her body. The aliens used the remaining power in the Starstone to alter Evangeline's DNA, and in doing so, granted her immortality.
How? I want to know exactly how. This is what I've been working on. How did they stop cellular decrepitude? How did they make her live forever?
Well, I think you're jumping to some conclusions. The aliens did not make Evangeline immortal in the traditional sense. What they did was make her body receptive to storing and utilizing the energy within the Star Stone. The energy renews the body for a period of time by re-energizing cells and repairing cellular damage due to aging.
I don't understand.
Think of an average person. How long do they live?
Well, obviously it depends on their country or environment or if the person is male or female, but let's say about 80 years old.
How long would a human live without oxygen?
Well, not long, obviously. 10 or 15 minutes at most.
Ah, so by introducing a temporary infusion of oxygen, let's say every 10 seconds, you can extend the human lifespan by a millionfold.
Okay, but I'm not sure I see the point.
Well, what if there were something far more powerful, far more rejuvenating than oxygen? That a human could be modified to absorb that would have the same mathematical effects?
A star stone?
Exactly. In healing Evangeline, Elgar and Kirana altered her DNA and changed her basic physiology so that she could safely absorb the healing energy within a star stone, thus giving her the opportunity to extend her lifespan in perpetuity.
What do you mean by opportunity? Doesn't she just tap into a star stone whenever she feels like she's getting a little weaker?
I'm afraid it's not quite so simple. A star stone is a very powerful form of energy, but not limitless. When Evangeline taps into it, the star stone's power is quickly depleted.
And then what happens?
She must await the delivery of a new star stone.
Cedric, what happened to Elgar and Kirana?
After Evangeline had been altered and restored, little energy was left in the star stone they had. There was just enough energy for Elgar and Kirana to send a message to their homeworld of Sorax to be rescued from Earth. When a ship arrived to take them home, they promised Evangeline a periodic delivery of star stones to continue her lifespan. This would be their perpetual gift to her for saving their lives. But to ensure that the power of a star stone would not fall into unwelcome hands, the aliens protected each star stone with the most complex security code imaginable.
What code?
Evangeline's DNA. After they had altered her genetic sequence, it was recorded and coded as an activation sequence to format each star stone that arrived to Earth. Without Evangeline making contact with it, the star stone remains unformatted and dormant.
Wait. If Evangeline was given the power to effectively become immortal, then how did you, and Sentient, and Anton, and Othello all get the power as well? Do you guys get your own delivery of star stones as well?
Regrettably not. Evangeline is the only immortal that has the power to alter a human. She is also the only one that can unlock a star stone so that the rest of us are completely dependent upon her to receive the energy we need to extend our lifespans. It means we are subject to her rule. Until now, that is.
What do you mean?
I mean you, McCallum. You are so very special.
Look, I'm tired of hearing that. I'm sorry, Cedric. I'm sorry, but I really don't understand what's so special about me.
As I said before, to understand who you are, you must understand where you've come from. There is an element of the Leviathan population, a rebel faction, that has been seeking to find another way to commune with a star stone. A way that does not involve Evangeline. Your parents were prominent members of this rebel group. They were damn good scientists as well. Your existence is a result of a secret genetic breeding program that has been a century in the making. And there have been many bloodlines and experimentations to produce someone as special as you. Someone that has what you have.
Which is what?
A genetic profile almost identical to Evangeline's. Close enough that it is believed that you may have the ability to format and unlock a star stone. Don't you see, McCallum? Senshun told you to go to Alaska to find the key? But McCallum, you are the key. You are our messiah. You have always been. Your potential has just needed to be unlocked.
Then what was that thing I stepped inside that turned me into an immortal? The sarcophagus with all those needles? I thought you said only Evangeline could make an immortal.
I said only Evangeline has the power to transform a human. But you've always been something quite different. Your Leviathan genes have lain dormant within you your entire life as a security precaution. Anytime a new individual is introduced into the Leviathan collective, he or she would be instantly sensed by the collective consciousness we call attuning. Your existence has been hidden and masked for most of your life by keeping your full genetic potential dormant. But now that your Leviathan genes have been activated, I'm afraid far too many know of your existence. They may even understand your potential.
And what potential is that?
Don't you see? If you have the power to transmute a Star Stone, then Evangeline's hold on the Leviathan group, on all immortals, will be broken. Understand that a civil war has been building within the Leviathan collective. There are the Edeners, the ones faithful to Evangeline's vision and obey her orders without question. And then there is us, the rebels who believe we should be free and not under the dictatorship of a madwoman. Senshun has been our leader. True freedom from Evangeline has always meant death. Until now, that is. You are our new hope. You are also an enormous threat to Evangeline, which means your life is in grave danger.
But Sedgwick, I've never met this woman, Evangeline. Why would she want to kill me? I don't want to be a part of any war.
Wanted or not, you are part of it now. Evangeline will seek you out and be relentless until she has you. But besides that, there is also a more pressing need for your cooperation.
And what's that?
Have you forgotten about Amelia, your grandmother? For reasons we do not yet understand, there is a deadly signal, a virus, that is traveling around the Earth, infecting and killing immortals. It has almost claimed the life of Amelia. And it pains me to say this, McCullen, but it is only a matter of time before it affects you as well. We are not certain, but we believe the signal originates from a Star Stone that has somehow malfunctioned. As if someone has plugged in a massive stereo at full volume and neglected to ever turn it down. The signal is so strong that it eventually overloads our immortal physiology and we die.
Well, how did that happen? Why doesn't Evangeline just shut it off?
I am afraid those are answers we do not have yet. McCallan, you are the daughter I never had. I love you and have always cared for you, and I've done everything to fight putting you in harm's way. But war is upon us now, and you must rise to fulfill your destiny. The fate of every immortal rests with you. We are under siege from an unseen enemy. You must find the Rogue Star Stone and neutralize it. That is your mission. But before you set out, you will need this.
What is it?
It appears to be a simple ring, but it does something very special. When you wear it, it eliminates the ability for other immortals to attune with you and you with them. It surrounds you with an energy field that will protect you from others attempting to read your thoughts. You have not been trained yet as to how to properly control access to your mind. I think it is a vital security precaution.
Thank you.
For now, you'll be safe here in Daravi. The Kumbar will see to it. The Condor is being refueled, and I think you need some rest, and I dare say some medical attention. I saw you limping on the way in, but we will need to get a move on soon. This Rogue Star Stone must be found and properly initialized before it kills all immortals. There are some of us who believe that this may be Evangeline's intention, and that is why she has not chosen to intervene.
But then wouldn't she die as well?
As I said, we are dealing with a mad woman. But for now, you need to rest. I know how much you've been through. I cannot tell you how proud I am of you.
Thank you, Sedgwick.
We will do everything in our power to keep you safe.
Sedgwick, I think we both know my days of safety are behind me.
Listening to the Leviathan Chronicles. The Leviathan Chronicles was written and created by Christoph Lapupka, produced by Robin Shaw, produced and musical composition by Luke Allen, directed by Nobi Nakanishi. For a full list of cast and crew, or to purchase the ad-free Director's Cut, go to leviathanchronicles.com. Thank you for supporting us, and thank you for listening. To discover more podcasts set in the Leviathan universe, go to leviathanaudioproductions.com or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Leviathan Audio Production.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.